Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Saturday, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the J8D View 2012. This is Melissa Biliardi, your host, and tonight, today, our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1, and our awesome producer, James Salvano, will cue you into the show. Please tell all your friends and family about Help for HD and the JHD View. Click follow on the show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. We are literally at 13,300 listeners now, so thank you for your support and interest in Help for HD programming. Huntington's disease. HD is a hereditary and terminal disease which destroys neurons in the brain and slowly diminishes the affected person's ability to walk, talk, and reason. In time, they will rely completely upon others for everything. HD devastates entire families emotionally, psychologically, socially, and economically, generation after generation. Every child of someone with HD has a 50% chance of inheriting the gene. Not only are our children at risk for HD, but also JHD, juvenile Huntington's disease. JHD is more rapid and virulent. They experience many additional traumatic symptoms like decline in scholastics, adverse behaviors, seizures, dystonia, and other very severe and painful conditions. Our JHD warriors need much, much more support and resources, which is why we're doing this show. Now, tonight, or today, I'm used to having our shows on in the evening, meet our super moms of JHD. We have lots to talk about today, so join us for some good conversation and support. And now I'd like for you in the chat room, our incredible listeners over there in the chat room, communicate with us by typing your questions or comments. And we'll take a quick break and then return to the JHD View 2012. awesome people in the chat room. We have some amazing people on our panel today. I'm going to introduce all of them. Janice Stevens, say hi.
Hi.
Tina Wooldridge, say hi.
Hello.
Lucy Kirkby, say hello.
Hello.
James Valvano and Crystal Martin-Zachary.
Hello.
Hello.
Stacy Sargent is with us.
Hey, everybody.
And Clarice Miller.
Hello.
So, what a great bunch of people. Listen, you know, we have kind of a lot of topics for discussion, but I'm just so thrilled to have Stacy Sargent call in. And also Lucy Kirkby is with us, and we're going to be talking about a, kind of a sensitive subject, it's hospice. And Stacy, if you could give us an update on Corey and how he's doing, we're very happy that you've called in to talk to us.
Hi, everybody. Corey's doing fine. As everybody knows, he started having seizures about 2 weeks ago. Come to find out, hospice had increased his baclofen without his neurologist's approval, and baclofen decreases seizure threshold.
Mm-hmm.
So we believe that was the cause of his seizures. He did have more about a week later. If these were less severe, they were what they call partial or focal seizures. It just affected his face and his respiration. But I think since a second medication adjustment on the seizure medication, no more seizures, but now we're back to a lot of dystonia, which mm-hmm. the neurologist is still playing with the meds to figure out what dose is right for Corey, and we're considering Botox injections to maybe make him more comfortable.
Now, Corey's had dystonia from the beginning, or when did that start for him?
Actually, yeah, Corey wasn't diagnosed until he was 15. Corey is my child from a previous marriage. I never knew that Huntington's ran in my ex-husband's side of the family. He started having problems when he was about 9. And it was with, excuse me, with dystonia. He had a few posture issues. His main issue, I think the first, hindsight being 2020, really looking back, his first symptom was his ADHD and his speech.
Mm-hmm.
He could never pronunciate certain things correctly.
Wow.
So,
and that was at an early age, huh?
That was very early.
Was it before 9?
Yeah, actually went before 9. He was born 3 months premature.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he only weighed 2 pounds when he was born.
Oh, my goodness.
And when he started kindergarten, he had speech, and we didn't think anything of it because I had speech when I was a kid. And it was in first grade, the school neurologist and psychologist and all evaluated him, and at that time they tried telling me that he was autistic. And if you know Corey, I mean, he's the most loving child you'll ever meet. Never met a stranger. And I was like, there's no way my child is autistic.
Yeah.
And took him to a neurologist, and he was diagnosed ADHD. And I'd say by the time he was in third grade, he had a just weakness on the left side of his face. And we took him, and it was actually the weakness and dystonia on the affecting his whole left side. And by that time, they diagnosed him encephalopathy, characteristic
mm-hmm.
of spastic cerebral palsy.
Mm-hmm.
And
you've just been through it.
Yeah, and then when he started falling all the time, which was about the time he turned 13, his neurologist retired. And his neurologist was one of the most highly recommended pediatric neurologists in our state. And I finally thought, well, he's almost an adult. Let's take him to an adult neurologist to see if we can figure out what's wrong with him. And it was 6 neurologist later before I finally got the diagnosis of Huntington's.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, did you say that you're a nurse?
Yes.
Okay. So, even being a nurse, I mean, being in the profession, the medical profession yourself, having all of these layer upon layers of, you know, medical diagnoses, how did you keep going with different neurologists, not knowing all of this?
Well, that's what kept me going, is I knew it wasn't cerebral palsy.
Right.
You know, and I never let on to any of his doctors that I am a nurse. And like I said, when I was in nursing school, we had, and I even actually, after Corey's diagnosis, pulled out my books just to see.
Mm-hmm.
And as a working nurse, I'd only had one Huntington's patient, you know, in my short 12 years of nursing now.
Wow.
But we were taught in school that it only affected middle age. You know, there was nothing about JHD,
yeah.
You know, and that was 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I look back now and I'm like, well, wow, did I even, you know, typing his symptoms into different sites, you know, ever come across that? And I don't know if I did and maybe just dismissed it, thinking, well, he was too young, or I don't know. But my philosophy is knowing is half the battle.
Right.
And once we found out that it was Huntington's, it was devastating, but it was also a relief, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it sure does. Oh, my goodness. Well, I've been through that, too. You know, I've been through a lot of, no, he can't have that, or no, he can't have this. Or, yeah, he does.
Yeah.
I mean, even so-called specialists have.
Yeah, and then, you know, it took me a long time, but I finally got in touch with my ex-husband about a year and a half after Corey was diagnosed, because I was like, oh, my God, what if he has other children that are affected like this and they're battling the same way I am?
Mm-hmm.
And I called, and apparently he's already in the late stages. I honestly think he was...
Oh, that means we have a question.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you, James. Hi, Stacy, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Okay, we have someone in the chat room who had asked, and of course you do not need to respond. Someone was just interested if you were willing to share his CAG repeat.
It is 84.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I don't know how many of y'all know about my Jimbo, but his CAG is 42. But, I mean, he showed symptoms way, way when he was younger. He's 32 now, but, I mean, he had trouble in grade school. And I noticed tremors in him when he was just a little boy, even before school, you know?
Yeah.
But, so tell us about how hospice is going for Corey right now. I know you had some issues, but is he able to get a little more relief from pain, or?
Well, they wanted me to go from ibuprofen straight to morphine,
mm.
And I'm like, no. Like I said, we've only been on hospice since the 2nd of February. Yeah, I'm having some issues with. Because my grandmother and my dad watched Corey for me and my husband to still be able to work. And when I told them no to the morphine and educating my extended family, I told the nurse, I said, no, because gets to that point, I will be home, and I will be the one administering the narcotic. I am the nurse. Everyone else is uncomfortable with it. I will be fine with it. No need to educate. Well, she was pushing my dad one day to give him morphine while I was not there. Yeah. So like I said, I had some issues. I finally let the nurse have it. And
what did the dad
told her she wasn't allowed to step foot in my house.
Did
Who
he call
was my
you?
Doctor?
No, your
no.
dad. What did he do? Did he call you?
No, he told me about it when I got home that evening. And
oh,
I asked him if
yeah.
he gave it. He said no. He says, I'm not comfortable giving it. You know, I'd rather you do that. And I said, okay, good. I'm like, you can go home. You know, because I was just too mad to speak to anybody. But
you're fired.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
no.
So now we're on our second nurse. But I can tell you that having a home health aide come, you know, two or three times a week, you know, just knowing that he's, you know, that she's giving his bath that day,
mm-hmm.
it has taken a tremendous stress off of us.
Right.
Just that part alone is such a big help.
Yeah.
And Corey loves her to death.
Is he completely in bed now?
Yeah, he's completely dependent. He,
wow.
He's bedbound.
Mm-hmm. Well, we love you, and our hearts are just breaking for you and for Corey. But we know, you know, I just had this conversation with my own son last night again about hospice, and you know when it's time. You know when it's
yeah
time to go that route, and it's a tough decision, but it's also a way to help our loved one who's going through this horrible disease to alleviate some of the suffering or try. But
yeah.
Again, you know, we all have to manage hospice too, right? I mean, we can't just hand things over to an agency and say, here you go. We have to manage them too, right?
Right, because
right.
they were, you know, they wanted me to sign the DNR and they wanted me to sign something else about life-saving treatment or refusing life-saving treatment. And I said, no. And I'm not signing those at this time. I said, it's not time. Because
mm-hmm.
even though most of our friends, you know, and their children know better than to give Corey candy or, you know, anything,
yeah.
there's a few who don't. You know, there's a few who don't come around that often.
You never
anymore.
Know. You just never know.
Yeah, you never know, and I don't want, you know, him to, you know, need emergency care or not receive it because he's on hospice.
Mm-hmm.
And the hospice people, his neurologist now knows that I'm a nurse,
mm-hmm.
and the hospice group knows that I'm a nurse. And, but, you know, I told my husband with the most recent thing with, like, the seizure medicine, I was giving it with a continuous feeding, and I was like, you know, if they know I'm a nurse, but it is still their job, whether I'm a nurse or not, to remind
right.
me of certain things,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially when I am exhausted
mm-hmm.
from being in the hospital and not being able to sleep because they're wanting to check him for diabetes, and he's never been diabetic,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're wanting to give him blood thinners, and he just had a seizure 4 hours ago. I'm like, no, you're not giving him a blood thinner and him fall out of the bed and bleed to death and have
right.
a whole other
right.
set of issues. So,
well, thank you so much for sharing with us. And please give Corey kisses and hugs from all of us.
I sure will.
We love you, and we're thinking
love
of you every day, praying for you. And I so appreciate you coming on the show. We have Lucy Kirkby here, too, to talk to us a little bit more about hospice. Lucy, you there?
I'm here.
You know, Help for HD, we're going to be starting a support group module. And, you know, hospice is such an important, integral part of the process here that we really would love to have input from you and from Stacy and from anyone who has experienced this. And Lucy, do you want to tell us a little bit about your experience with hospice?
Well, my experience, I think, is going to be much different than a lot of people's experience. I think a lot of it is because of how much I knew about Heather and her Huntington's, which everybody's Huntington's is different.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times when hospice comes in to help a family, just any family, they have a certain protocol, a certain way of dealing with the patient, and everyone's different. And as we all know, Huntington's is completely different than most other illnesses.
Right.
And it just didn't fit in that mold. When we brought hospice in, Heather had had a really bad experience. Was starting to go downhill, but what started us bringing hospice in and everything, she had seen her dad, who had passed away years before.
Mm-hmm.
He had come to her and told her it was her time to go. So she flipped out, very hysterical. And hospice came in, and their way to handle her was to medicate.
Mm-hmm.
And they over-medicated to a point it would have knocked out an elephant. And thought, well, that's how she, you know, I mean, it took all day, a lot, high dose of medication. And that's how they thought it should be. They wanted me to leave the room and let her go through her dying process, work it out herself. It was something she needed to do. And tried to push me out the door and shut the doors and say, let's let Heather process what she's going through.
Mm-hmm.
And this just didn't sit well with me. And I thought, I knew Heather and medications, and you could give her enough to knock out an elephant, and she's not going to sleep in a couple hours.
I know.
And that's what happened. But she came to her own peace that, yes, okay, it was her time to go. But when she was ready, she was so determined it would be on her terms.
Right.
And it was.
Good.
But hospice kept insisting on, this is how we deal with patients. And they kept referring to cancer patients and that they have a lot of pain, and this is how we deal. And Heather didn't have a lot of pain. I said, well, no, that's not appropriate treatment for her. And I think because I knew so much about Huntington's and Heather, I knew enough to say, no, you're not dealing with this right. I learned from a friend of mine whose father did have cancer. They knew nothing about medical issues or caring for someone. And they welcomed, and you put a lot of trust in hospice to be the people that come in that are the experts that know what they're doing, and you let them take over. And with Huntington's patients, I firmly believe you're the expert, and you need to be the one running the show. They're there to help you and to help the patient.
Okay, I like what you just said.
And
Lucy, could you repeat that? Because what I think a lot of us don't realize is that we know our children more than any doctor or any hospice person could know them.
Yes,
and,
ma'am.
And so, we are the ones who need to be somewhat in control of what other people do with our children, right?
Right.
So could you repeat that again?
If I can think of what I said.
What you said about...
We have to be the ones in control because we know our children and we know what their needs are and we have to trust in what we know is best for them and we have to run the show. The hospice should be there to help us, to help the child, not just to come in and take over.
Right.
We learned this from the very beginning, and things only got worse. And they just totally wanted to take control, everything from wanting to bring people in to help, to bathe, to do everything, which at one point I did allow, but at that point I was still very, I'm the mom, this is my quality time with her.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy this time.
Yeah.
And they just really were trying to push everything on me. No, no, you need to step away, let us take over. And I ended up firing them.
Yeah.
And got a different company. And when they came in, I just from the beginning, here's what my experience was, I'm not having that. Either you get on board with me or you're out the door too. Thought everything was fine. We
Mama
get to
Bear.
A certain point with the nurse started having her own opinions of, well, I called it playing God. She decided that it was, you know, it was time for Heather to let go and just go. At that point, I said, no, this is between Heather and God, and
yeah.
she'll go when it's her time. We're not there. You know, you're not supposed to be helping her to go.
Oh, my Lord.
And it got to a point they were trying to slip her medication. One nurse came in. She brought another nurse with her, tried to keep me from the room. Now, our story, like I said, it's not typical. It's just scary, but it happened. They gave her a medication, and I knew because Heather's mouth was very dry, and they slipped her something, and it was coming out of the side of her mouth, and I was able to swab it all out, and, okay, they're fired.
Yeah.
We went through...
Like we fight everyone, you know? I just...
Exactly. You know, we went to the supervisors. At one point, I had the supervisor coming out because I wouldn't accept anyone else, and we had a really big, which is rare for Texas, an ice storm. And that's because they had been pushing me for the DNR. And at that point, I really decided, because the nurse couldn't get here, and that's when I finally signed it, because I thought, okay, if something happens to protect me, because there is no hospice nurse here, it's just us, you know, if something were to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I went ahead and signed it. But at that point, I realized I did this with her dad before. I cared for him without anyone's help.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, we're getting such horrible care. I'm just going to get rid of them and do it on our own.
Mm-hmm.
And then the supervisor brought in one last nurse. She's like, Lucy, will you please just hear this lady out?
Yeah.
So this poor lady, what I put her through, it's like, have a seat and listen.
Yeah.
And by the time I was done with her, she said, I completely agree.
Oh, God.
And she was just an angel. And from that point on, she fought for Heather. She fought for me.
Yeah.
She was just a godsend. But it took a lot. And I think
it's kind
it was
like
very hard because I had to be strong. I was fighting for Heather to be treated right.
Yeah.
I needed someone's help. I didn't need somebody to come in and control
right.
what was going on or try to, as they said, help things along.
It's kind of like you need to be coached for all this, right?
Exactly. And
okay.
I fought the system because they would not give her, I don't know if things have changed. It's been
right.
5 years, but they would not give her any kind of fluid or anything, any IV.
Wow.
Heather at one point was begging for water. She went 12 weeks without food or water.
Oh, my God.
And at that point, I was giving her an eyedropper, half a dropper at a time of water because she would choke. It would take me 8-9 hours to get a cup of water in her.
Yeah.
She was so thirsty, so dehydrated. And I fought hospice and got them to give her fluids subcutaneous.
Mm-hmm.
I said, this is not prolonging life. This is making her comfortable.
Right.
And that's what you're supposed to be about.
Right. Right.
So we argued, and I won.
Yay, Lucy won. James, we have a question from the audience.
Actually, I'm going to put Krista Martin Zachary on. Krista, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Could you give us a feel of the chat room?
Yes, Lucy, everyone in the chat room would like to thank you for sharing your story on this. It's really touching people and letting them know that they have options. I personally work as a private caregiver, and I've been where you're at. But everybody is extremely grateful for
yeah.
you to be willing to tell your story. This is a story that really needs to be told.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I hope that if it helps one person just to know, you have to trust in yourself. That's my main message, is that you know what is right, and you have to fight. And a lot of times when you're in that position where you've had to to bring hospice in to help. You're tired, mm-hmm. you're worn down, you're emotional. You don't need a battle, but mm-hmm. sometimes, I mean, you have to get that energy to fight for what's right, because in the end, you have to look back and have no regrets.
Right.
And I truly believe, had I kept that first hospice, Heather would have been gone within a couple of days, and it would not have been, you know, she had 4 months of quality life. She went on her terms when she was ready, very right. peacefully.
Yeah. I think that's the key, don't you, when she was ready. That's the key.
Exactly, and I think that's what hospice should be about, is coming in to make the person more comfortable, to help them have, if there's such a thing, a quality passing.
Mhm. Yeah.
It should be peaceful. It should be...
Right.
It shouldn't be the way I think it happens a lot of times. And my big thing that started me, I had told Janice, I was just after reading on the Huntington's support groups with several of the juvenile kids that, you know, I've been close to following all these years, have brought hospice in and passed so quickly. Once I saw hospice was brought in, I knew it's going to be very soon, because the way they do things, and that put me on this mission, and I didn't know how I was going to figure this out, but I just felt like I've got to get the message out to hospice, to the different people that work with hospice, that Huntington's is not to be treated as any other illness. You don't go in and just medicate and sedate we all know there are medications that affect your breathing, that, you know, I mean, it's, they say to keep them comfortable, but what it speeds up the process.
Right.
And you have to be very careful with those medications.
Right.
One of the hospice nurses, at one point, we picked up a medication, and I looked at the dosage. The dosage was completely wrong. It was at a dose that was 3 times what it should have been. And when I took it to the doctor and showed him, he said, if I had given her that dose, it would have killed her.
Wow.
And so I went back to hospice, got rid of that nurse, said, you know, this was not just a simple mistake. But you just have to be on top of it.
Really?
So that's kind of my new mission, is I need to educate hospice in any way I can to please learn about Huntington's and approach it in a different manner. Approach the families, because it is a family disease. It doesn't just affect the person with it.
Right. It's not a
so if I could accomplish that, then I'm going to be happy.
You're going to be speaking to someone about this?
I went to a hospice appreciation luncheon, and I approached the director and quickly told her my story.
Wow.
And they said that they did have a couple of patients. One had passed recently that had Huntington's, and they have another with Huntington's. And she ended up asking me if I could come and maybe do an in-service and speak.
Ooh.
And so I'm going to do that next month. Not sure what I'm going to say yet. I'm going to have to sit down and try to put all my thoughts together. But I think that's a start.
Be sure to include this episode.
That's a very good idea.
Yes. The link, you know, once we're recording live right now, but once the show is over, this show is available in iTunes and Android Market. It'll be up on the internet, so anyone can access this specific episode. And this is a good idea to share with people in hospice. We're talking about hospice today, you know. Stacy,
right,
gracious enough to share with us. And Crystal, did you have any other comments from the chat room?
Actually, I think she just stepped away. I think that she was going to mention, because I've got 3 or 4 windows open myself.
Okay.
But the feel was also to obviously thank Stacy for sharing what she had today with her experiences with Corey. So we just wanted to make sure that she knows the people in the chat room are paying close attention and thanking her so much for sharing her experiences, too. Thank you, Stacey.
And thank you for having me.
Yes. And, Lucy, I think this is a really great thing that you're doing, and I applaud you and encourage you.
Oh, well, thank you.
You know.
Well, it's not going to be easy, but I think hearing everyone's different experiences, you know, I talked to Janice at length about this many times,
mm-hmm.
and her experience was so different. And I thought, yeah, if I could just get a lot of different stories.
But you know,
it just seems to be a pattern that I've seen with the hospice that, and it scares me to think that they could come in and that things shouldn't just be, I guess, just helped along. there's a difference there, and I don't think a lot of people realize that, as I had said before, my main focus is we have to trust these people. We're in a position where we consider them the so-called experts, and we have to trust in ourselves and follow what they're doing. Be active. Be a part of that process. Don't just let them take over.
We don't want it to be a euthanasia situation either.
Exactly. And that's how I felt that it was going to be with Heather at first, and it would have been had
right.
I not been observant, not been so proactive in her care. And I just don't agree with that. That's not their mission.
Right.
But they lose track of that mission, and it's our job to have to, it's sad that we have to do that.
Well,
but we have to be aware of what's going on.
Yeah. Now, here's the situation. You know, my Jimbo, we were wanting to put him on hospice, and they denied him. They said, since you're not willing to sign the DNI, then we don't think he's ready. And, I mean, he's suffering every day with dystonia and pain. And, I mean, he cries every day and every night because he's in so much pain. So, you know, we have one more shot. We're going up to Stanford in April to see if there's anything else that can be done to help him with the pain and the dystonia. But, I mean, it's kind of our last shot, and we don't even know. It's going to be difficult for us to even get there. The insurance is paying for an ambulance ride up, but not a ride back, which doesn't make any sense to me at all. So we have to drive. And I don't know how that's going to play out with him having attacks, and I'm having to drive. It's not like I can pull over on the side of the road and help him through an attack, you know. So it's just crazy.
Well, me and Terry won't even do short rides with Corey without two people, one person driving mm-hmm. and the other person to monitor Corey.
See, that was a big part of me getting hospice, was we were at a point where getting Heather, it was too hard to get her to the doctor.
Yeah.
And I think she had an open wound at that point, which actually got us, because she was scratching all the time. And up on the top of her chest, right under her neck, she had scratched it raw. We got a home health nurse to come in, and she's the one that said, you're going to need more than me. You know, it's time to bring in hospice. But I just said, we can't physically get her to and from appointments at this point. So that was actually part of what helped us get hospice to come in.
Well,
yeah.
See, and our thing was the doctor wanted to get us some help, get us some relief. And, yes, like I said, having our aide come two or three times a week, I mean, we love her, you know, and she'll ask me every day, you know, do you want me to wash Corey's hair? Do you want me to shave him? You know, and she knows that's, you know, my time with Corey is washing his hair and Dad's time with Corey is doing his shaving, and she doesn't want to infringe on that. But, you know, I do home health now, and, you know, I often refer people to hospice who have Alzheimer's or dementia or, you know, when they're on a lot of meds that they can't afford, because hospice does have a lot of benefits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've gone from paying $200 a month for Corey's medications to $50 a month. Because they're covering a lot of them. They're providing a lot of his supplies for his tube feeding and his, you know, the nutrition for his tube feedings. And, And so that it's helping us out a lot financially. And I understand that, yes, they're used to getting cancer patients who are going to die any day now. You know, and that's what I told them. I'm like, you are not here to euthanize my son. You're here to help us as a whole, as a family, you know, and help it to be to help to decrease the stress so it's more peaceful for Corey when his time comes. And no one knows that but him and God.
Now, see, talking about this, you guys, this gives me courage to stand up and go, no, this is what he needs and this is what, you know, you need to do for him, right?
Yeah, because,
I mean,
because like Lori said it best, we know our children better than any doctor.
Right.
You know, when they gave him the Ativan for the seizures at the hospital, I looked down and I said, are y'all crazy? That's not going to touch him.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yes, it is. We gave it IV and it's going straight into his bloodstream. And I'm like, okay, he'll be screaming in 30 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And sure enough, 30 minutes, you know, they're back in there. And I was like, I thought you said, like, I know my son.
Maybe with the normal person that's going to work, but no, not.
Yeah. Oh, we have so much to educate, don't we?
So much
to educate about. Oh, my goodness.
But you have to believe in yourself and be strong and know that you have to advocate for your child. And,
yeah.
I mean, it's sad we have to do that, but. I mean, you know, we're mothers, and that's what we do.
Yes.
You know, you
Mama bears with claws.
Mad mothers, you know.
Yeah, I had a friend call when the old hospice nurse came in and called, you know, about an hour after he knew she was arriving. He's like, you didn't kill her. She's not in the backyard, is she? I'm like, no, but had she come back, she would be.
Exactly.
Like, okay, Mama Bear, calm down. I'm like, no, you never be. Don't mess with my cubs.
That's so true, isn't it? Janice, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Can you give us your experience with hospice? Would that be something you'd be willing to share with us?
Well, Melissa, I had an awesome hospice. I don't have any complaints.
Well, we need to hear that, too.
Well, when my daughter's doctor realized that I was going to need help, because he had suggested a couple times that I put Adiana in a home, because I was single at the time. My husband was in a nursing home because of his Huntington's disease. And so family was at a distance, so I was coping with all this on my own. My sons had to go live elsewhere so that I could take care of her. So it was just me and her.
Mm-hmm.
And like Stacy, we had no clue that Huntington's was touch our child. And then when we found out the diagnosis, and she did have juvenile Huntington's, it's like, where do we go? What do we do? How do we do this? And as I told you in the first show, her neurologist had never really dealt with juvenile Huntington's. He had only heard of juvenile Huntington's one time previously on a weekend, when a girl did a layover at the hospital that he was over until she went to her regular hospital. Well, anyway, like I say, further down the road, when it was time for hospice with Adiana, because he was like, put her in a home, it's too much wear and tear on you, you're doing this all alone. I'm like, no, my child's not going to go in, because I did not want my daughter to be molested. You hear so much of molestation or abuse in nursing homes. Now, not all of them. There's some of them that they have the most awesome folks. But you do, even on the news, you hear of all these horrors, and that was not going to happen to my child.
Mm-hmm.
So when he said, okay, let's do home health. Well, home health, we had three different of those, and it was because Medicaid would only pay for 2 months at a time. Well, by the third time, I was like, forget it. You know, we're not going to keep going through this. And that's when they said, okay, let's put her on hospice. She can be on hospice for 6 months. And I said, well, we're not putting this child under. And they're like, no, 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 no. Oh, we do everything we can to keep her comfortable as possible. And sure enough, like I said, they were such wonderful, awesome ladies at Ann's Haven Hospice in Denton, Texas. And they would come in and help bathe her and wash her hair and clip her nails and just really baby her and love her. The morphine was brought up earlier, I believe, by Stacy, the hospice wanted to bring in morphine. We did have morphine, but that was not until she went into kidney failure. She was under hospice care for 5.5 months when Adiana had already snapped into a comatose state. And once she went comatose, I guess it was within about 3-4 weeks that she did go into kidney failure. And she had water coming out, water blisters on her hands and her feet. And I told my sister, I said, something's wrong. Something's not right. Why is she doing this? And I called the hospice and they came for her. And it was on the weekend. This was on a Sunday. And they said her kidneys have failed. Oh. And it was then that we shut off her feeding tube because the liquid had nowhere else to go except to seep out of the skin. Mm-hmm. Because the kidneys were no longer functioning. We never withheld water from Adiana. We never withheld her feeding from her. And that was the night that they brought in the morphine, but we did not have to use it until approximately 4 o'clock the next morning, and she only took 2 doses before she fell. But that was to keep her out of seizures and any type of pain. It was not brought in months before. It was at the very, very last, and we knew we had no more. And we were not denied hospice because I did not sign a DNR. When it was there, when we were at the very last of Adiana's life, the hospice came and they were asking us, do you want to take her to the hospital? If we take her to the hospital, they'll put her on life support.
Yeah.
And I said, no life support, because there was no coming back for my daughter.
I know. I'm sorry.
And that was one of the hardest decisions a parent has to make.
Yep.
Now, had she still had a quality of life, I would have been there in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no quality. She had already went down as far as she could go. There was mm-hmm. no more steps except this.
Yeah.
But I'm so thankful.
Could you see that she
was such a wonderful hospice?
Oh, that's wonderful. Could you see that she was ready to? I mean, could you tell that she was ready to go?
Pretty much, because well, I knew she was giving up a year before that.
Uh-huh.
I knew she was slowly giving up.
Yeah.
When she would let them give her a shot or withdraw blood or what have you, and she did not fight. And
yeah.
I knew that was the beginning of the end.
Janice, everybody in the chat room is saying we love you and thank you for sharing. And we're still sorry, Janice. And
I just want all of the listeners to know.
Yeah. Thank you.
That
thank
just
you so much.
Because they're a doctor, a neurologist, a medical attendant, listen to your heart.
Yep.
If something does not feel right about your child, get a second opinion, a third opinion, a fourth opinion, whatever it takes.
Yes.
They are human too, and all the humans make mistakes.
Yeah. Thank you, Janice. Thank you so much. I think we better take a break here. James, you want to take a break?
Yeah,
and we'll be back. We'll be right back, y'all, with some more talking and wonderful moms of JHD. Talk to you in a minute.
You settled down, that you found a girl. she gave you things I didn't give to you. Old friend, why are you so shy? Ain't like you to hold back or hide from the light. I hate to turn up out of the blue uninvited, but I couldn't stay away. I couldn't fight it. I had hoped you'd see my face and that you'd be reminded that for me it isn't over. Never mind, I'll find someone like you. I wish nothing but the best for you too. Don't forget me, I think I'll remember you say. Sometimes it lasts and loves, but sometimes it hurts instead. You know how the time flies. Only yesterday was the time of our lives. We were born and raised in a summer haze, bound by the surprise of our glory days. I hate to turn up out of the blue uninvited, but I couldn't stay away. I couldn't fight it. I had hoped you'd see my face and that you'd be reminded that for me it isn't over. Never. Nothing compares, no worries or cares, regrets and mistakes, their memories made. Who would have known how bitter sweet this would taste? Never mind, I'll find someone like you. I wish nothing but the
back, everyone. We had some pretty interesting chat in our screening room that I'd like to share with y'all out there. James, are you going to bring us on now? Bring us all out.
Here we go.
Lucy was telling us about some experiences that she had with Heather. Lucy, tell us a little bit about what you were talking about in the screening room.
Mm-hmm. Well, the comment was made. Does the person, the child, know when it's their time to go? And from our experiences, they do. They very much do. Mm-hmm. And Heather's last 4 months were just the most incredible times of our lives. It was just spiritual things happened and just incredible things. Heather basically had a foot in each world. She saw things. She saw her dad, her grandfather, whom she never met. He passed from Huntington's as well as Heather's dad. They came to her. We joked about things at first because I really didn't understand it. You know, it was really hard for me to comprehend this. And and Heather, I think the first thing she told me was that her dad was building her a castle in heaven. And I kind of laughed and joked and said, well, he never built me one here, you know, trying to be funny. And she looked at me and was like, well, Mom.
No, really, seriously, Mom.
And she described these things. And, you know, I came to the conclusion that, you know, we've never been in heaven. We don't know what it's like. Everybody's heaven could be different.
Mm-hmm.
Their experiences are different. And if this brings her comfort, I'm thankful.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it prepared her for, I guess, where she felt she was going.
It's cliche to say, but part of the journey where they're kind of vacillating between, you know, their life on earth and what is to come. So they're kind of starting to step into the spiritual realm, and they're starting to see their past relatives or friends or animals.
And exactly.
It's kind of their way of preparing for what's to come, right?
Right. But she had seen my grandmother. My grandmother passed away when Heather was 9 months old. Different people. She had seen relatives of friends that had come over. Our minister, who was here daily, she had a message for him from his grandmother. And I did not hear what was said, but he was just beside himself. Because whatever had transpired was something, it was meaningful to him. And just things that you can't explain happened. But Heather had gone 12 weeks with no food, no water, and it was just, her mind was still sharp. I mean, there's just no explaining this. And when Heather would speak of these things that she saw, these experiences, she would speak very clearly as if we're talking now. When for Heather's last probably 2.5 years, you couldn't understand her when she spoke. It was really slurred, and it was hard to understand, and you'd have to ask her several times and then try to decipher what she had said. But when she spoke of these experiences, she was very clear.
Mm-hmm.
So we all just kind of gathered around and thought, oh, we got to hear this. We're meant to hear this. And she would share all these experiences. And like I said, you know, as all the weeks went by, you're just to the point of it's too hard for you to keep hanging on. And we'd have these talks of, because the nurses and hospice and everyone says it's important to tell the person that it's okay for them to let go and to go, that you're going to be okay. And Heather and I would actually laugh, because I would tell her, okay, I'm supposed to tell you it's okay, you can go, and I'll be all right. And then I'd look at her and say, but I'm not ready.
Yeah,
you can't go
like
yet.
She'd
always turn her head and look at me and go, Mom, you know, I know I'm confusing you, I'm sorry, but if you need to go, you can go, but please don't. You know?
Yeah.
So we did this for 4 months. You know, if you have to go, you can, but I'm going to bed, but please be here when I wake up in the morning, you know.
Yeah, I'm doing that with my son right now, too. He's, you know, he's seeing his, we'll have a discussion, and then it's very upsetting. You know, they cry a lot, and they just are torn, you know. But he'll go out into the garage, and he'll come back, and he'll say, Mom, I just saw Grandma Katie and Grandpa. And I said, oh, okay. And he says, and Grandma Katie told me to give you a hug and tell you you're doing a wonderful job. And both of them have passed, you know. And,
yes.
And then he'll say, you know, and I'm seeing Grandpa with his hat, because he had a straw hat with a red bandana. So he's, you know, he's seeing these people and talking to them and, you know, quite normal. It's like a normal occurrence.
Exactly.
Or he'll hear our dog that passed a few months ago. He'll say, "Oh yeah, Jamu's over there," you know, and he'll actually see him. He says he sees him and talks to him.
Oh my Lord.
You know,
Heather saw our Dalmatian, and she told me his name was Domino, and she goes, "Domino's there." And I again tried to joke with her. You know, this was at the very beginning of all this, and I said, "Oh Lord, I'd hate to hear what that dog had to have to say to me. I was so mean to him." And she looked at me and goes, "He forgives you, Mom." And I'm like, "Oh my God, I can't do this anymore. You're messing with me now, child." You know, because that is her personality.
Yeah.
And she just said, "It's okay, Mom." You know, and I'd just be like, "Are you kidding me? Are you?" You know, and I'm thinking, okay, put it in perspective, Lucy. No, she's not messing with you.
I really think there's something to that, and I don't think it's hallucinations. I think they actually are connecting spiritually with them. Don't you?
Right. I do. She, you know, when she saw my grandmother, at first it scared me to death but then looking back, we found pictures of my grandmother about the same age I am now, and they look very similar. She had tried to tell me, she said that, because I could tell she was looking at, it's like she was looking at two different people standing in front of her, and you could see her eyes going back and forth, and I said, "Well, who's here?"
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Her dad," and then she said, "It looks like you." And, yeah, I was like, "Oh, Lord, do you know something I don't know? You know, am I going to?" I said, "I love you, honey, but I'm not ready to go." And we realized it was my grandmother. My grandmother, before she passed, had said, "When it's your time and your children's time," said, "I will be there. You know, I will bring them home."
That's
sorry. So the fact that I felt like she saw my grandmother.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And she was there, brought me comfort. But when she first started seeing her dad and everything, the crazy thing is that Erin, my youngest daughter, you know, they say the little ones see things because their minds are more open to things. But she saw Heather's dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget it because I was sitting on the stairs with her, and she's looking about the height of where somebody would be standing and said, "He's here again, and I don't want him here because he's here for Heather."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Who?" And she said, "Heather's dad." And I said, "Where?" She was right there. "Don't you see him?" And, you know, here she's barely three. And I'm looking, and I'm just going, "Oh, my gosh." Because Heather was seeing him, and now she's seeing him. And she, my little one had seen the cat that Heather saw, which died 3 years prior. And so I just looked at it about where she was looking, and I said, "Okay, if you're here, I'm grateful that you're here for Heather. It's bringing her comfort.
Mm-hmm.
However, you're scaring Erin. I can't have her scared.
Uh-huh.
So please be here for Heather, but don't let Erin see you because it scares her."
Wow. So Erin,
and she watched him as if he was walking and just went up to the ceiling and said, "He's gone." And I'm sitting on the stairs just thinking, okay, you could come and get me and lock me away somewhere right now. I can't believe this just happened.
Oh, wow.
But she would see people. She saw God twice. She would see angels. We did have, on occasion, two nurses from hospice that stayed overnight so I could get some sleep. And both of them that morning, the next morning, one told my husband, one told me that it was the most rewarding experience. One nurse said, "I really needed that."
Aww.
Watching her watch angels and interact with the people that she was seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently this is quite common
mm-hmm.
in people's last days or months. And
wow.
And it's comforting. At first it was scary. I remember I would lay on the floor next to Heather's bed at night, and I'd think, okay, show yourself.
mm-hmm.
I want to experience this incredible thing. And I never would.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband said, "Well, I don't think you're ready. I don't think you could handle seeing something because you freak out."
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's probably right. Had I seen something, I would have probably run down the street screaming.
It wasn't meant for you. It was meant for Heather.
Exactly.
Right.
But we had neighbors that came in. Like I said, our minister, people that would come into Heather's room and experience the smell of their mother's perfume. Or one lady said, I know that my grandfather's here. I know, I feel him, he's here. Yeah, they had these incredible experiences.
Yeah.
And Heather would just smile. And I know, you know, maybe I'm out of line here, but faith has gotten me through a lot of hardships in life. But Heather had, we had someone that hadn't been to church in 35 years start going to church again after visiting Heather.
Wow.
And at one point my husband said,
tell me that's not God's work.
Heather, you're doing something here, aren't you? And
yeah.
She just smiled and said, my dad and I are. God wants us to do this.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And you know, what do you say to something like that? That even though these were her last 4 months, she was dying. She was going through some incredible experiences. It had so many blessings and rewards for not just our family, but other people.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some of the hardest conversations, ones a mother's not supposed to ever have with her child.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know Heather. We thought Heather was just out of it. We were talking about her funeral. And all of a sudden she woke up and says, because I was thinking purple flowers. She goes, no, I want pink and purple. And all of a sudden she helped us plan her funeral.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was one of the hardest things for me to do. But then when that time came, I was so happy because I looked around at the pink and purple flowers and everything, and I thought, this is what she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And it,
so
I just found that we shouldn't be afraid, as hard as these conversations are, to say the things you want to say. Don't be afraid to do it. Don't think it's too early or not appropriate. I mean, Heather and I talked about anything and everything, and
mm-hmm.
I just wanted to make sure that she knew everything I needed her to know.
Oh, bless you. Thank you so much for sharing that. We all need to hear that, because I haven't been there yet, but I'm getting closer with my Jimbo. And I mean, you know, conversations will come up where we'll start talking about those kinds of things, and then you know, no, not ready yet.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you experienced that with Heather, if anybody else has experienced that with their...
Well, it's hard. You don't want to
talk
about it. You don't want to bring it up. You don't want to hurt their feelings or make them think about something that would upset them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we find that they're ready.
Mm-hmm.
They're okay with it. And
well,
for Heather,
about,
it was from the moment she was diagnosed, she looked at it as a relief.
Right.
And maybe they're afraid to say something to us. I know Heather was afraid for me. You know, I had to tell her, I'm going to be okay. Am I ever going to be the same? No.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to make, you know, I have to go on.
Right.
So I had to, you know, I was just honest with her. I wasn't going to sugarcoat anything and say, oh, I'll be fine. I'll, you know, I just told her the way it is. And you need to do what you need to do.
Here's another idea. I mean, okay, the fact that our loved ones are gone in body, they're not gone in spirit. They're still here with us. And everything
Very
that we
much
say
so.
And everything that we do, they're cheering us on, you know?
I won't get into any of that right now, but that's a whole other story. We've had some incredible experiences that are undeniable.
Wow.
That Heather's with us.
Yes. And she's helping you right now.
And that was my big thing I would tell her. I said, if there's any way possible, you know, like I said, we talked about everything. Once you leave and, you know, you get to heaven, you have to let me know you're there and you're okay. You know, just tell God to hang on. I just got to let mom know I'm okay, and then we could go. And she did. She found a way to let me know, and it was undeniably my sign. But like I said, we as crazy as something and out there as it may seem, don't be afraid to talk about it. And that's your child.
Right.
You know, you share everything. You have to make it a good experience. And, you know, standing up for her rights with hospice and this stuff is, we wouldn't have had those 4 months of conversations, of laughing, of joking, and her sharing what she was experiencing. You know, all the people's lives that she touched. We wouldn't have had that had I kept that first hospice.
Right. Wow. Oh, we have a question or a comment. Hello.
Hi, it's me, James.
Hi, you.
I just wanted to maybe take a moment. Crystal, are you with us, hon?
Yes, I am.
We have quite a few comments. So I was wondering if, Crystal, you could read the comments from the chat room.
Yes, one of them is from Ken Moore, who cares for his wife, Angel. He said, everything she did, Miss Angel has done, planned the funeral and all. Her favorite colors are pink and purple. She has even picked out dolls she wants to be buried with. Meta
Meta
said, this is such, okay. This is such a wonderful lesson for everybody. Let go of the fear or discomfort and talk about anything.
Thank you.
And
hi, Mary. Love you.
Ken also said that Miss Angel was the one who wanted to talk about it and has never showed any fear or worry about it.
Awesome, Ken. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. We are thinking of Miss Angel every day and praying for you and her. We see you on Facebook, so thank you for joining us and sharing. We appreciate that.
Okay. And there's one more comment.
Okay.
Okay, this one's from Deb Madden. She said, I am so touched by the show and the brave people who come on to tell their stories, as painful as they may be. Love each and every one of you.
Thanks, Deb. Love you.
That's nice.
Well,
you
know, this is something that we haven't talked about yet, right? I mean, nobody's talking about it. So this is really important stuff. And
I'm glad you feel that way, because it is. It's very hard stuff to talk about. It's hard to live through, but it's reality. It's there, and it's something that we need to talk about. We need to not be afraid.
Right. Well, we have a very dear friend of mine just called in, and I would love for her to join us now. Meta Arir?
Hi.
Hi, Meta.
Hi, Melissa. Hi, everybody.
It's wonderful to hear your voice. Thank you for joining us.
This is wonderful. It's on a Saturday, so I may listen to it live instead of later.
We're very, very excited to have you on the show. Tell us, why am I getting a reverb here?
Do I need to mute or something here?
Maybe you're, turn the volume down on your program.
Okay.
Okay.
How is that any better?
Yes,
okay.
That's wonderful. Meta is a very close friend of mine and James, and we would love to kind of get your take on what has been said so far on the show.
Well, as I'm sitting here listening to it, I'm thinking, this is not just information for, you know, people in crisis, like the, you know, the people with HD and JHD.
Right.
The information that you're talking about applies to absolutely everybody in the world.
Right.
The message being to, you know, stand up for yourself, and particularly as parents, standing up for your children, because we do know them. And this last piece that you were talking about of, you know, why are we so afraid to talk about death? Why are we so afraid to talk about things that we're, you know, that we find discomfort in facing? Hiding, which, of course, my experience with, except for you, the people I know in the HD community, is that they hide.
Uh-huh.
So this is you know, so fabulous that it's out in the open now.
Right. They're starting to come out of hiding.
Yeah. Yeah. But everybody hides. You know,
everybody
hides something. We all feel shame or
we're
afraid of criticism or whatever it is.
It's
so
kind of human nature, right?
Well, does it have to be?
No.
I don't think it has to be.
It's healthy to discuss these things and get prepared for what's coming. And I think,
So it's really been wonderful for me to hear more parents talking about their experience.
I don't know if you heard the part I was telling our audience about Jimbo seeing his grandpa and grandma and his other grandpa. And that just happened yesterday when he came back in the house and gave me a big hug. And he said, Grandma Katie said to tell you you're doing a wonderful job. And I know that came from her because those are not his words. He would not say that.
That doesn't sound like Jimbo at all.
No, that he would not come out with that kind of phrasing or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He said he just had a long conversation with Grandma Katie and Grandpa Ray, and they're together, they're happy, they're in their younger selves,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of interesting that he gave me that information. And you know, he had a long talk with Grandma Katie about what I'm doing and how I'm, you know, trying to take care of him and doing all this other stuff with the show. And he says, she told me to tell you that you're doing a wonderful job.
Oh.
Like, wow.
So sweet.
You.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, if when we start letting go of the physical, you know, or what we call our physical reality, we open to being able to see and hear spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another lesson. Why can't we do that? No, everybody should be able to do that. Everybody has the ability to do that.
Yeah.
I find it really encouraging, I guess, that when we're going through something that's really hard, we do have this other kind of support that's not normally, we don't normally think of it.
It's kind of like people who maybe are not experiencing these things that we're experiencing look at you like you're nuts.
Mhm.
But I mean,
who's really nuts? But I think the people who separate themselves from it are
the
ones who
are
at least missing out.
We have a whole community with proof that it's happened to them too now. So
mm-hmm.
we're not nuts.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think we have another person in our panel here that wishes to speak to us about something. Allison, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you call in. And did you have an experience that you'd like to share with us?
Well, you know, I came in late, so I didn't get hear the whole conversation. I think the thing that really resonated was, you know, talking about our inability to talk about death. And, you know, my experience has been my oldest daughter, Carissa, is 9 years into her progression. And my second oldest daughter, Judy, passed away 15 months ago after a 12-year battle with juvenile Huntington's. And then I also have an 18-year-old and 14-year-old who are not at risk. And so, you know, really interesting dynamic in a household, you know, where you're dealing with the disease, and then, of course, the impact on, you know, the other children. And, you know, my younger girls, you know, this has been a huge, you know, the majority of their life. And, you know, we definitely have always were open, honest, you know, didn't speak about the death part is negative or, you know, this horrible, awful thing. You know, I mean, we talked about how everyone dies and, you know, if, you know, just because someone may know what's going to take their life, you know, it doesn't change the fact that I'm dying, that you're dying, we're all dying. That's, you know, that it's, you know, sort of like birth, that next beautiful thing, right? So
right.
You know, birth is amazing, but death is also this, you know, special time that you know, we certainly shared as a family, you know, with Judy's passing, and she was here, and we were with her, and we always openly talked about it, you know, with all the girls and with Judy, and, you know, she... you know, kind of like Heather's mom was saying, you know, something we definitely talked about with Judy, and she was really clear about what she wanted, how she wanted things to be, you know, refuse any kind, I mean, wouldn't even do oxygen. Like, she just was not going to do anything. And really, I mean, it was on her terms, and really was, even though obviously, you know, losing a child is the one thing that we, by as humans, are not prepared to deal with. We are just not set up by nature to lose our children. But really, I mean, it was, and not a very highly religious person, but spiritual person, really a spiritual time in our life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as just being together, and I think that openness about death and, you know, and even being able to tell Judy through those last several months, you know, when you're done, it's okay. We're mm-hmm. okay, and we love you, and we're here, and we know you love us. And, you know, any old time, you were just done, girl, you know. And that's really sort of what she did, you know. It was definitely on her terms, and we were with her. And, you know, I think that's so important. And, you know, it ties into that, you know, coming out and being open about what you're dealing with and the disease progression. And, you know, I just think if you aren't doing that, it just can create such a difficult time that it really doesn't need to be.
Right.
You know, not that it's not going to be difficult, but
no.
But there can be this peace that our culture doesn't allow us to experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
We culturally don't want to talk about death. We don't want to, you know.
Or deny that that's going to happen. No, that's
mm-hmm.
not going to happen. Or no, it's, you know. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's totally about coming to grips and coming to terms with what is to be, what is going to happen eventually. And like Meta said, this is something that is going to happen to all of us.
Right.
But because we are experiencing HD, we're in this HD world, you know, it just is more intense and more, you know, difficult because
yeah.
we're dealing with children who are dying. We're dealing with our, you know, brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers who are dying from this disease. But
well, and it's the continual loss. You know, I talk about
mm-hmm.
this with a lot of people. You know, this disease is so different in that, you know, it's not like someone who has cancer. My mom fought cancer my entire childhood. She was always who she was. Even in her sickest of moments, she was my mother, right? And, you know, this is different in the sense that you are in a grieving process for years because you've, you know, you're grieving the person that person was a year ago. Then you're grieving who that person was 6 months ago, right? I mean, you're in this continual grief process
right.
and loss that's so different than other illnesses.
Not only
right?
that,
I mean,
but generational too, right?
Absolutely, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, then you add in the familial piece,
mm-hmm.
and it's just such a different dynamic in that sense. And I don't know. I mean, I think humor and a positive attitude, like, is all I have. I mean, really. If I didn't have a really sick sense of humor, I don't know that I would, you know, be able to move again through this process again, right?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and finding ways
you
to even
to
laugh.
You have that.
Oh, I mean, you know, and even laughing about Huntington's, right? I mean, we always say, oh, that's an HD thing, or, you know,
yeah.
the HD shuffle, or, you know, I mean, whatever it is that we can shift it from being a negative
mm-hmm.
to something that's positive in our life, that's funny, that's, you know, it's the only way we could get through.
Right.
So I'm really glad I joined. And
I'm so happy to have you on the show, Allison. I think you sent me an email, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
And I've been meaning to call you, so I will definitely call you, I promise.
Oh, for sure. For sure. No worries.
And we have the doorbell, so that means somebody wants to give us some information or a question.
I'm here. I'll share this one with Crystal because we've had quite a bit of comments in the chat room. This is from Marissa Gutierrez. I think what makes me
Marissa.
Afraid. Sorry. I think what makes me so afraid is my fear of living without my son. Uh-huh. I just don't know if I have that kind of strength. That's why I love listening to all you moms, because I hear you and think, if they have the strength, maybe I can too.
Sorry. Thank you, Marissa.
Yes. And we have Crystal. Crystal, are you with us?
We're here for you, Marissa, okay? Just give us a call.
Yes, we love you, Marissa.
And join us. Crystal? Did you say
this
Crystal?
Is Lucy. I have to make a comment about that.
Okay.
You don't. I can totally relate to that because I did not think I could do it. I did. It scared me so bad. I mean, I would think about that. I mean, constantly. You know, what am I going to do? How am I going to live without her?
Mm-hmm.
Even though having two other children, you know, that's your child. And it's hard to face. And I would be honest, I would tell Heather, I don't know if I can do this. And I got my strength from her.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of helped each other through it.
Mm-hmm.
And as we're saying, you know, with the humor and the, she passed on February 21st. My birthday was February 14th. Heather was just had a great sense of humor. She was just, you know, like I said about the story about the dog, you know, I thought, okay, is she messing with me? Because she loved to do that. She would just mess with me. And I thought, okay, and as bad off as she was, and I knew she needed to just let go and to go. Because I felt like she was suffering. She needed to go. I finally got to a point I felt that, but I couldn't let go. I thought, okay, I know it's best for her to go, but I can't be without her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I struggled, but I did it openly with her.
Right.
And I said, okay, please don't go on my birthday. You know, that I couldn't handle that. That would just destroy me. You can't do that to me. And she had this, what I call her evil little grin, that she gave me. And I was like, oh, you mean little thing. That's what you're waiting for, isn't it?
Wow.
And I said, you can't do that. And then I turned it around, I thought about it, and I went to her and I said, Heather, it would be an honor that you picked my day to go. And I would look at it as a celebration that you are now free of this disease.
Right.
And she looked at me, and I swear it was a look like, well, now you blew it. I'm going to stay around. And and she did for another week. But I was like, okay, thank you for waiting.
Oh, that was good.
But, you know, the day that she finally did go, it was unusual weather. It was beautiful. It was sunny. We opened our windows. You could hear the birds singing. It was Ash Wednesday, and, you know, of course, everything's out with purple. And she made it perfect. It was on her terms. But that is something that I thought the whole time. I can't do this. How am I going to do this? And finding the strength afterwards, all I wanted to do was to go and just be alone, just do my own grieving. And it was really hard for me because here I have two other children.
Right.
That suffered a loss too.
Of course.
And I knew I had to be there for them. And I wanted to be selfish and just, like I said, go and just shut a door and just be alone. But we made it through together. And somehow you find the strength to do it. It's been 5 years now, and, you know, I can't say it's any easier.
Mm-hmm.
I think I could talk about it a little bit better, but as you could see, I still get emotional, and I always will. She was my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
but
I think
I wouldn't give up a moment of what we went through.
Wow.
Yeah, she was a gift, and I'm still learning. I'm still learning from her gifts and trying to put, by my wanting to help hospice, wanting to make a change, by offering advice to other parents or just here's what we experienced, here's what we went through, by sharing her story, she's not forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
She served a purpose. And if it helps just one family, one mom, one or just one person, or brings awareness or changes the way people think about Huntington's, juvenile Huntington's, and it's worth it to me. And it's healing. It's very healing.
It is.
To talk about.
Yeah. Well, we've had some additional comments in the chat room. James, did you want to say, give us the comments?
Sure. Yeah, okay. we've had quite a few, and I apologize if I'm missing anyone. It's just, it scrolled up so quickly. From Ken Moore, he says, even though I am not losing a child, but my wife, it's helping me to listen. It's helping me to listen to those who have lost loved ones, to find strength to try and prepare my heart for the loss
right.
I will have of my wife. Thank you so much, Ken, for sharing that.
Yes, and it's so true.
And Deb Madden replied to Marissa, Marissa, you are the mom that we all are. You are courageous by simply being here. We need to talk, laugh, and cry together, and we can help each other through all of this. Love you.
Mm, good.
And there was another comment from our wonderful friend Meta, who gives us a lot of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Pay attention to how the children's spiritual connection develops and see what you can learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so many more comments, and I apologize for it. Everything is scrolling up so quickly, but we appreciate everyone in the chat room.
Thank you. Well, Tina, did you have something that you wanted to say, too? I'm sorry, I've kind
right now,
of...
I can't stop crying.
Oh.
I want to thank Lucy, Janice, Stacy, for everyone that has shared their experience with hospice.
Yeah.
This isn't something that I'm facing right now, but it is. I've had tons of questions because I've seen hospice come into other illnesses and seen what happened, and that was my biggest fear. So knowing that I can have the help of hospice but still have my input has been a tremendous help to me, and thank you all.
Thank you, Tina. And it's true.
I feel bad that you're crying.
We do fear what we don't know or understand. So that's why this is so important. And it's one of the reasons why I'm doing the show is because there's so much fear that surrounds our everyday lives with Huntington's. And not having connection with other families has been, a problem, I think, in the past. So I'm really... happy to be able to bring people together, and we need to talk about these issues. It's very important that we discuss our experiences, and it's healing also for us to come together and cry and talk. So it's difficult sometimes, but it's so good for us to be doing this. I think it's healthy, and I just want to tell everyone I appreciate you so much.
Well, I loved what Lucy said about her Heather having such a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
Brother was talking, or Seth, I'm sorry, I call him brother. but Seth was talking about when he passed away, he wanted to be cremated, and he wanted me to carry my ashes everywhere I went, or his ashes everywhere I went.
Oh, wow.
And I asked, I said, why is that? And he said, well, I don't want to be left out after I'm gone, So,
wow. So are you?
Now, could I? Well, if he's serious, yes.
Oh.
I mean, I wouldn't have a choice. That's his wish,
yeah.
As a mother, that would be hard.
Yeah, for sure.
That would be hard for me to do.
Yeah.
But can I ask the panel and an audience a question? Because this the kid's grandfather passed away late Saturday night, and he had HD.
Oh.
And during his funeral, my daughter took it very, very hard,
mm-hmm.
Because she knew him and had a relationship with him.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the funeral with her, and during this funeral, the preacher said, you know, they'd been praying for years that Bill would be healed of Huntington's, and they believe God healed him Saturday. Okay, well, my take on that, and I called my whole family. I mean, when I left the funeral, I called everybody in my family, and I said, don't y'all dare ever, ever, ever again pray that brother will be healed, ever.
Yeah.
Because my take on that was, well, the only way they're going to get healed is if they're not with us anymore.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Just kind of wondering what everybody's take on that is.
Oh. Well, Melissa speaking here, and this is just my opinion, but, you know, we know that there's no cure. And even the treatments are not, you know, really successful. So saying, you know, wishing that we had a cure or that someone would be healed is just that, it's wishing. And, you know, I believe that God can do anything, but to what extent, like you said? Does that mean
right.
death? Yes, because we don't have a cure right now. So that's my opinion. That's my personal opinion.
I guess my thought was if they continue to pray, then is God going to decide to take them quicker? You know what I mean?
Well, and I think sometimes our spiritual leaders, you know, they have a lot of faith and you know, they have a lot of command in their preaching, but they may not necessarily understand a disease, you know, fully and understand the, you know, the implications of what they're saying. So, you know, they're human and, you know, they're not perfect either, so they're going to make mistakes. We just have to know what's right in our heart, in our own heart, right?
I have to agree with what Melissa just said. I think a lot of it's their understanding, because a lot of times, say, somebody with a cancer or so, I keep referring to that, but, you know, I apologize for that, but with something, you have to go into remission or to be healed, to be cured, and Huntington's is not like that. Like Melissa said, there is not a treatment or a cure. I don't think they're intentionally praying for them to be healed necessarily by passing. I just think that they don't know any other way to say that they're praying for the person. I think they don't have an understanding.
And that's probably true. I mean, it was all I could do to keep my seat and not stand up and yell at him.
That's the situation where you might want to have a private conversation with them, you know, behind the scenes, and say, explain, this is the way it is, and there is no cure, there is no even treatment for it. And
maybe
before,
make another offer, a suggestion, pray for peace and comfort, or,
right.
you know, but
yeah.
not for healing, because there is no healing.
Yeah. Maybe spiritual healing.
You know, give them an alternative.
And maybe, you know, maybe spiritual healing. Maybe not necessarily physical healing, but spiritual healing. Because there's a difference, you know?
Yeah, there is.
A good point.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of us are spiritually suffering, you know, hurting. And to pray for spiritual healing, that's the core of our being, you know, to be healed spiritually. Physically is a different story, you know. We have infirmities. We can't change some of that, especially with Huntington's. We can't change the genetics by just prayer. But we can ask for spiritual guidance, for spiritual healing, for spiritual awareness, that kind of thing. That's just my take on it anyway.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I appreciate your being here and sharing with us.
Yes, thank you so much for sharing with us.
Hearing especially that you've just suffered a loss so recent. I know this has probably been just very hard, but thank you.
Yes. It gives me strength.
Thank you.
I'll
mean, y'all just don't know. I've enjoyed the information that I've gotten. It's helped me to not be so scared of the hospice situation, knowing that I do have control over that.
Can you hear me if I speak up?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, just adding in on the hospice situation, I've definitely talked with other parents, you know, in regards to bringing hospice in, and obviously that was probably a several-year conversation that occurred in my house, and something that was not openly received. Like I said, it was something we discussed over several years, and, you know, 6 months before Judy passed away, we went ahead, made that decision, and really for some really selfish reasons. You know, the reasons we made that decision were that I knew I wouldn't have to worry about, gosh, you know, are her meds out, or, you know, like that was one of the big things. I knew that they would deliver the medication. I no longer had to think about that. That was really my primary decision around bringing hospice in. Now, I'm a very strong-willed, hard-headed woman. I will admit it. And I made it very clear to my other children that we were running the show, that everything was going to be as we wanted it. And really, for those 6 months, all we allowed hospice to do was come in once a week, weigh Judy, check her blood pressure, check her oxygen, those kinds of things, deliver her medication. They never, in those 6 months, administered one dose of medication. They didn't feed her, bathe her. I mean, we were still caregiving 100% for Judy. You know, the benefits of that support, whether it was the social work, the, you know, those were all in place. But it was, I mean, we were really running that show. If I wanted them there once a week, twice a week, you know, three times a week, I mean, whatever that was that fit what we needed is how it went. I mean, and I think people, you know, think hospice comes in and they take over. I mean, they will come in and do as much as you need them to do or as little. And really, I mean, that is it. They didn't come in and take over our life. They came once a week. And I know a lot of people, you know, use that support really at the end of life. You know, hospice can be present during those days, those hours, if that's something you need. I didn't want that, you know. So I think we saw the hospice nurse probably the Monday before Judy passed. She passed on a Friday. They came, and we said, all right, you know, we'll let you know. And we spent, as a family, those days with Judy. I didn't want these people in my house. I didn't need them stepping me through, you know, any of that, personally. Now, other people, you know, really do need that kind of support. Mm-hmm. I didn't want that. I didn't need it. And, you know, when Judy passed, we had, you know, hours even after that we spent with her, you know, before I even called them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it really, you really do have control over the level of care or support that you want with hospice. And I think that's scary to people. And, you know, for us, it was very, very minimal support. Uh-huh. And, but, you know, I'm so grateful they were here. It, you know, and really, especially, and I know these are the things that are tough to talk about, really after Judy's passing, the benefits of hospice being present were huge. I mean, simple things like I knew Judy's body wasn't going to be touched by, you know, she wasn't, one, going to need an autopsy, right? Tough things to talk about. Mm-hmm. But, and we didn't even allow the mortuary to wheel in the gurney to remove her body. I didn't want that trauma for my other children. Mm-hmm. So we literally let them come into the driveway. They got the gurney, and we as a family carried Judy out of our home. No one took her from us, mm-hmm. right? We gave Judy to
wow.
them. We laid her on the gurney. So we literally never saw anyone touch her body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we laid her on the gurney. They put her in. And, you know, she also wanted to be cremated, a demand for years. And so, I mean, those kinds of things and having that time to think about how do I want this to look. You know, I'm really grateful that I thought about, you know, not traumatizing my other children by these strangers coming into my home, picking up their sister, picking up my child, right, and taking her from me. You know, that was a really symbolic thing for me. And so I was able to have that time, I think because of the support of hospice and that time we had together to think about those kinds of things,
right.
you know, and to make sure they happened the way I wanted them to happen. And you know, everything I wanted happened as I wanted. And so, yeah, I know that hospice is scary, but I couldn't have been more grateful for the help that they gave us and that they respected my boundaries, you
right.
know. So that was all. That was all I wanted
Thank
to share.
Thank you so much for sharing. And Janice Stevens is with us too. You had a really good experience with hospice, and I'd really like to get more insight from you on that. Are you with us, Janice?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good.
You're back.
I had the most awesome experience with hospice, and I am so thankful that I had that with them. One point I would like to touch on was Allison saying that she did it this way and this way and this way, and that is awesome. But not everyone knows that they can do that.
Right.
Some folks think that, okay, I've got this hospice. They don't know that they can fire a hospice if
mm-hmm.
it isn't that hospice.
Right.
And they do need to know you can change your doctor. You can change your hospice. You can change whatever change that needs to be made can be done.
Well, that's funny, Janice.
I was so blessed after hearing all that. I'm sorry, James, but let me get the screw through. Before I lose my thought, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I am just so thankful after hearing some of these horror stories, how blessed I really was to have such a wonderful hospice.
Yes. And like you said, Janice, you know, we have the power to say yes or no and change if we need to change. So that's the message, is that we do have the power to do that. And I appreciate you bringing that up because, you know, hospice is scary for those who have not yet worked with it. And, you know, my experience was not good. but yet, you know, on the other side of the coin, after, you know, talking with my son about it, he's like, okay, well, I'm just not ready yet then. You know, so that was a good thing for him to go, okay, I don't want to go that route yet. I'm not quite ready. And so that, you know, those are some of the things that if we can just keep talking about it and, you know, discussing these things among ourselves and, you know, the one who's actually having to go through this horrible experience physically, then, you know, I think we're up on our game, right?
Right. James, what were you saying? I am so sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, hon.
James, are you with us?
Oh, I have my mic. It wasn't me.
Oh.
No, it was me. It was Allison. I just sound like a man. I'm just saying. No, I was just going to reiterating what you were saying was, you know, that nurse first came in and I made it very clear. If my 12-year-old, at the time Beta was 12, if my 12-year-old wants to fire you, you will be gone. You know,
right.
I mean, it was just that clear. It doesn't even need to be me. If my 12-year-old doesn't like you or sees something that she thinks is slightly shady, you know, my 12-year-old has a right to fire you.
You're
so
gone.
Just so, you know. So it wasn't even me. I mean, we were talking everyone in the house. If she had a problem, you're out of here. So.
I love that. Bonnie used to meet nurses at the door before they'd even get over the threshold. What is your experience with Huntington's? What do you know? And, you know, and I'd be like, Bonnie, let them in the door, please.
Right. Well, because let's face it, my 12-year-old knew probably more than almost every doctor I've seen, you know, so we had to kind of follow her intuition a little bit as well, so.
Isn't that amazing? My gosh.
Yeah, we just think we're the boss. It's really these JHD kids that are boss. I mean, they.
It is. It's true.
They determine how the day is going to go. They determine what's going to be done and what not going to be done. And they are truly boss. We just think we are.
That's a good point. I hadn't even thought of it that way, but it's true, you know. They have the reins. We're just along for the ride. For sure.
And it's quite a ride.
Yes. Quite a roller coaster.
Well, listen, you guys, we've only got about 7 or 8 minutes left on the show. We've had a great show, and I just want to thank all of you in the chat room, everyone who's called into the panel, everyone who's called in and dropped. Sorry we dropped you, but I don't know what happened. And come back and listen to the show. And please, Lucy, let us know how you do with your in-service speech and venture that you're about to go out on. We'd love to hear
from you. Oh, thank you. I'll do that. Wish me luck on that.
Yeah, please feel free to use this episode as, you know, a tool because, you know, all of our guests, super awesome JHD mom guests that we've had and our wonderful chat room comments, Ken and Meta, has been great.
Is that okay with everybody here that I use that, our comments and everything? And
it's okay with me because, you know, Allison, I read your thing on Facebook about, you know, your hospice experience with Judy and how you carried her out. And I was like, that's what I want my experience to be. And
great.
And because, I keep thinking, what would I want it to be for me?
Right.
You know, and, you know, I want it to be, of course, 10 times better for Corey. But, you know, when you said that you carried her out so that it wouldn't traumatize your other children, you know, I thought, you know, that was something I hadn't thought of. I was like, how is my daughter going to feel about this? And, you know, how is she going to feel when that day comes? And, yeah, we had parent day at her college today, and, you know, I was able to bring her off to the side and tell her, you know, Kristen, it's, you know, I know we put your brother on hospice to get us some help so that I wouldn't have to think about his meds and to take some of the work and stress off me. I'm like, but, you know, we need to start thinking about these things. And, you know, your dad and I have chose to have him cremated so we can bring him back home where he belongs and so we can visit him whenever we want. And I asked her today, you know, does she want a locket with his ashes in it? And, you know, that my husband and I have decided that, you know, we are the only three that are going to do that, you know, that
right.
Not grandparents, extended family, that we just want that to be a bond between the three of us. And she's like, I have to think about it. And I said, that's fine. That's why I'm mentioning it now, you know, to give you plenty of time. But, yeah, I had thought about that, about, you know, who carries Corey out, you know, and, yeah, it's going to be me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because I think that would be better for her.
Well, and it's all those horrible things you don't want to, I mean, you know, for years I didn't think about, even remotely like that. I wasn't thinking about, like, her body being taken from, like, I don't know. When I was thinking about the end, those were not things I was thinking about. And but, of course, as it got closer, those things started sort of popping in my head, like, which is terrible. I mean, we should not have to think about those things.
Yeah,
but I did. And like you, we have necklaces that have Judy's ashes. And, you know, she's got her urn is a Harley Davidson engine because she was my little Harley girl. And I also, right. And I actually do take ashes when we go, you know, whether we, you know, the Prescott Huntington's Retreat in Arizona, or, you know, a convention, or, you know, anywhere we go that maybe is outside of the norm, because really we don't do that much because we're, you know, pretty isolated to the house. So anything that's outside of the norm, if we go to the mountains to sit by the river, I do take a little bit of Judy's ashes, and then we, you know, have left them at the Prescott Retreat because Judy loved the Prescott Retreat, and you know, so we do kind of do some of those kind of weird things that people probably think are a little strange. You know, we've swallowed her ashes definitely as the wind has blown them in our face. you know, you just do the things. You know, I think it's respectful to do the things that they wish, but then
she's still a part of the family. That's
absolutely.
She may not be here physically, but she's still a part of the family, and that's how I
absolutely.
Feel with Corey. You know, he is still going to go on vacations with us. He is
yep.
still, you know, going to be there, you know, not just
yep.
in spirit, but I have to have a piece of him with me.
Yep, yep.
Physically. So,
yep.
yeah.
Incredible, you guys. Thank you so much. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to be listening to this one again very soon and sharing it with my support group, because I have a support group. I have about 30 people in my support group here locally.
Ooh, that's a good group.
Yeah, we're going to be doing Help for HD support group module. So, you know, if anybody wants to know a good way or easier way to start a support group, I'm working on a plan to sort of, I guess you could say, franchise it so that, you know, people can just kind of look at a formula and go, hey, I can do this too, because, you know, anyone can start a support group. And it's really been a wonderful thing for my family, for me and my family, to belong to a family locally of HD, you know, people. And, yeah, I have about 30 on the roster. Not all of them can attend the support group, but I'm in contact with them every month and sometimes every day, some of them. Love them to death. And, you know, we're here for each other. So, you know, the main thing is that I want to thank you, all of you on the panel today, for calling in, for sharing your stories with us, sharing your lives with us. I can't tell you how much it means to me, and I know that it means a tremendous amount to those who are listening and those who will be listening to come. Keeping in mind that these episodes are recorded live and they're going to be shared with probably thousands of people in the future. So this is wonderful, amazing information and personal accounts of your experiences, and I so appreciate you coming on. James, did we have any other comments real quick? We've got about 2 minutes left of the show.
No, everybody in the chat room is just saying some wonderful, loving, supporting comments.
Okay.
Enjoy the show.
Great. Upcoming shows real quick. March 26th, that's Monday, we have HSG, Prana, Reach 2HD. It's a new clinical trial. The HD View on March 27th, Tuesday, Louise Vetter, CEO of HDSA, is going to come on. We've got really important questions for her. April 2, the HD View, Ask Dr. Goodman. We're going to wrap up the show, and I just want to thank you, everyone, again, for tuning in to the JHD View 2012. Contact me at helpforhdinternational.org. Find us on Facebook at Help for HD. And come back and listen to the recorded episode. It's going to be a great tool for all of us to take out to the community. And get the free Help for HD app at wehavespace.org. And God bless you, everyone. I love you all, and thank you, Tina, Lucy, Crystal, Janice, Stacy, Allison, James, my awesome producer. Love you, guys, and have a great day. We'll talk again next month. We'll have another JHD show. I'll let you know when. Find out what's a good time and date for everyone. And God bless you, guys. Love you.
Hold on to my love, I'll help you be strong.
reach your heart. I can't say.
Love you guys. Have a great day. Come back and listen. Send this out to your friends and family. And thanks again for tuning in. Everything.